Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Nathaniel Deakins on behalf of Mr. Abdul-Amin. My registration number is 38752. Because there are a few cases, I will just give a brief summary of the facts to orient the court. The defendant, Mr. Abdul-Amin, was the live-in boyfriend of the victim. The victim claims that Mr. Abdul-Amin choked her after they had an argument over a phone bill, and then Mr. Abdul-Amin then left the house. Mr. Abdul-Amin denied choking the victim, although he did admit tying her hands and feet before he left the house. A very similar incident occurred, or was alleged to have occurred, approximately 1 year prior to this incident between the victim and a different live-in boyfriend under substantially similar circumstances. When the defense attempted to introduce this evidence, when they proffered evidence of this prior incident, the trial court excluded this highly relevant defense evidence that the charged act did not occur.
Well, it didn't exclude all the evidence, did it?
It excluded the important evidence.
Some evidence.
It excluded the important parts of it. However, Your Honor's credit.
Important is not a very specific term. What was excluded from your reading of the trial judge's order?
The evidence offered, just to start from the beginning, the evidence offered was evidence or testimony from the alleged perpetrator, the previous boyfriend, also cross-examination of the victim, and also evidence of the officer that investigated the first incident.
Okay.
So we attempted to cross-examine and also to introduce our own witnesses. The key part of all this was we wanted to present to the jury evidence that the victim had falsely accused the previous boyfriend. So Your Honor is correct in that the trial court did allow us to introduce, present certain aspects of the prior incident. Specifically, that the allegation was made. The testimony of the investigating officer is what was allowed to be introduced so that the court can read the testimony of, I believe it's Officer James, who testified. That was the limit of what the court allowed us to introduce.
What was the limit?
The limit was that an accusation was made.
Well, the officer testified, he was allowed to testify that he responded to the scene, correct?
Correct.
He was allowed to testify, if I have my recollection correct, that there were or were not, like, red marks on the victim's throat. I think he said he didn't observe it, he didn't observe any, but the other officer said there may have been, right?
Correct.
He was allowed to testify to that, right?
Correct.
And this is a question I have for both counsel, which I don't understand. The officer that testified did not write the investigating report. That was a different officer who apparently left the force by then, I think they said. But the testifying officer was permitted to testify about that report despite not being the author, right? That investigative report is in our court record, but it doesn't appear that it was offered as a trial exhibit. Can you clarify for us how that came about?
Your Honor, I was looking at the report myself this morning, and I noticed that it did not have a beta stamp or a...
It was a trial court exhibit, right? It was marked as a court exhibit.
I would have to double check.
Here's what I really want to get at. Was there any... I didn't see in the record anything that precluded the defense counsel from asking Officer James about the content of that report. He referenced the report in his testimony.
Well, the trial court's ruling prohibited him from doing that.
Which ruling?
The ruling, an ongoing ruling, if you will. This discussion took place over several days. The first day, the defense counsel made its offer of proof that he wanted to introduce evidence of this through Mr. Hines, as well as through the three types of evidence that I described earlier. The trial court said, acknowledge that this previous incident was irrelevant, however, the truth or falsity of it, the only reason that it actually is relevant, was inadmissible.
Well,
so to the extent that the...
Okay. Was there any ruling by the court that prevented the defense counsel from asking Officer James, according to that report, what did Mr. Himes say when he was asked about the incident? That question was never asked by defense counsel, was it?
Well, the trial court made a blanket ruling that said evidence that this incident was true or false is absolutely not admissible.
That's not the question. The question is whether Hines was telling the truth or not telling the truth. Was there really any ruling that said the officer could not testify about what the report said? You read the report. It says in there, right? That Hines says he didn't do it.
Right.
What precluded the defense counsel from asking Officer James about that report? My understanding was he said you could ask about hearsay, that the prosecutors allowed it.
That conversation prior to James testifying was about giving this court's ruling that this specific type of evidence is not admissible, the falsity of the report. What do we do now? How do we introduce evidence consistent with the court's ruling? So defense counsel, the trial court, the prosecutor engaged in a discussion. How do we do this? The prosecutor said, if you want to, get into the report, that's okay.
Yes.
Within the trial court's ruling that you can't get into the truth or falsity of it. And I do have the printout of the discussions. I can grab it.
I have it too.
Well, in my brief, I cited to the portions of the record in which this topic was discussed. The trial court said, you cannot introduce evidence, the truth or falsity of this evidence, and that the defense counsel repeatedly tries to...
And do you interpret that ruling to preclude the question of the officer?
Yes.
What? I haven't said my question yet. That's the following. The trial lawyers jump on that. Do you interpret that as precluding the defense counsel from asking the officer, what does the report reflect as stated by Mr. Himes?
I did interpret it that way, Your Honor.
Why?
The reason is that would elicit evidence in violation of the trial court's evidentiary ruling.
That they couldn't put in evidence of whether she was truthfully or falsely stating.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Go ahead. I will leave it at that. And
I do want to address any concerns you have.
My concern is that, my overall concern with this case is that, can you point to one question that was tendered by the defense counsel to which the defendant objected, and to which the prosecution objected, and the objection was sustained, that we could actually look at the record and say, oh, that ruling?
Well, I'm asking this court to review an in limine ruling.
Yes, but that in limine ruling, as you know, is on five or six or seven different colloquies of the court. And to me, the bottom line one is probably the last one, which seems to say you can ask questions of the officer, you can ask questions of the victim. I don't want Mr. Himes here to testify. It seems to me that the judge is going to.
Well, I respectfully disagree that that is the court's ruling. And again, the portions of the record which I cited that contain the colloquy between the parties and the court make it clear to me that the court was disallowing evidence. Our offer of proof included eliciting evidence of the truth or falsity of the previous allegation through these various means. Trial court said, no, that's irrelevant.
Okay, so the officer...
It's understood by the parties that...
But the officer testified, he investigated it, he was asked, were there any red marks, I'm paraphrasing, but were there any red marks on the victim's neck? I forget, he said yes or no, but the report said something different. That question wasn't precluded, and it was asked, right?
Well, I can get the transcript of the testimony. The prosecutor was the one who was eliciting evidence that this prior allegation was true, to which we objected, and the court said, yeah, don't go any further.
Okay, I'll read the transcript. Go ahead.
Okay, and Officer James's testimony can clear up some of that in terms of what we elicited through Officer James and what the prosecutor did. And I point to that part of the record and also the closing argument as the prosecutor is the one who filed the trial court's ruling. I think it was clear to the parties that they were not to get into it, the truth or falsity of this prior allegation, in terms of evidence or in terms of argument.
Right.
And the prosecutor was the one who flouted that ruling.
Wasn't the defense theory essentially, with respect to this issue, essentially this? That this victim has a practice, a habit, a modus operandi, if you will, for when she breaks up with her boyfriend, she calls the police and says he strangled me. That's what you were trying to get in front of the jury, weren't you?
Correct.
And wasn't it argued by the defense counsel in the closing argument?
And no, it was not, Your Honor.
How do you characterize the argument that the defense counsel made? He wasn't silent with respect to the findings.
The defense counsel's argument comprised, like, you know, 10, 12, 15 pages of transcripts. Defense counsel's comments on this subject occurred in the middle. And in the context of defense counsel explaining the inconsistent stories of the victim, and if you've read the testimony of Ms. Merrick, of the victim, pardon me, that there was a awkward or encounter between defense counsel and the victim. And defense counsel's point when they raised this topic of the prior accusation was that the victim gets upset when people cross her. And that was a direct reference to the cross-examination of defense counsel. Now, to the extent that defense counsel did mention the prior accusation, that wasn't precluded by the trial court's order.
Mm-hmm.
What was precluded was mentioning the truth or falsity of it. And the defense counsel did not do that. Prosecutor, on the rebuttal close, mentioned there's no evidence of falsity, which is, in my brief, explained that I thought that was improper. I do want to save some time for rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, my name is Jay Fisher and I represent the people in this matter, registration number 44350. Your Honor, it's the people's position that the evidence regarding the victim's accusations against Mr. Hines were completely irrelevant. It shouldn't have come into the trial at all. Thus, the defendant is coming to this court complaining that he did not get enough information to his trial about a subject that shouldn't have seen the light of day in that proceeding in the first place.
Why is it irrelevant?
It's irrelevant because it fails at least one case test and three rules of evidence for admissibility and relevance. It was presented to the trial court as reverse 404B evidence. However, even under that rule, it still has to be admissible under Rule 402. Now, extending to the defendant every benefit of what the evidence may show, it may satisfy the first two prongs of that test, but there is absolutely no way that it could satisfy the third prong, which says whether under Rule 403 the probative value of the evidence is substantially outweighed by the danger of unfair prejudice. In this particular case, the people would have been burdened with proving both the allegations against the defendant as well as the merits of the old incident involving Mr. Hines.
But I think you'll agree that's not the basis of the court's ruling. This ruling that it made that Mr. Deakins is referencing certainly didn't rule the evidence totally irrelevant. He let some of it in. He said, I'm going to let some of this in. And he never said, I'm going to keep some of it out because it was prejudicial.
Well, he found some of it clearly irrelevant. He said that there were two aspects of this evidence that he was not going to allow into evidence.
What would you say those two aspects are then?
I would say
I had trouble articulating what they are, frankly.
The first one was that there was any evidence by Mr. Hines' testimony stating that the victim was lying. And the second was that the district attorney's office did not prosecute Mr. Hines.
And that issue is that's off the table right now. I don't think the defendant's griping about that there was no prosecution, that it was dismissed, whatever. That I don't think they're arguing that. That's okay. Really the other part of the ruling. And so you said that the other part of the ruling was that there could be no testimony by Mr. Hines that the victim was lying?
Was lying, yes.
Did he preclude testimony from Mr. Hines entirely?
Yes, the trial court did preclude Mr. Hines from testifying himself, yes. Okay. But as Your Honor has already referenced, there is a whole issue with this police report.
Why don't you explain to me how you understand the situation of this police report? And I'm not sure why it didn't come in as an exhibit. I'm not sure why the officer was allowed to reference it. I'm not sure if he was limited in how much of it he was allowed to reference. I can't tell from the room. I can't tell from the questions in the rulings.
I can't agree, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I mean, I have no idea how this particular report got to where it was and how it exists in the record. So I'm sorry, I can't explain that. But anyway, that goes to an argument I'll be making later, which has to do with harmless error. But going back to my argument why this was inadmissible, it was also inadmissible under Rule 608B and the decision in Liggett versus People, because the defendant was attempting to show whether a witness was truthful or untruthful on a particular occasion, and that's improper character evidence. And so consequently, it was inadmissible, again, going to the whole idea that this evidence should have never come into the trial in the first place.
Well, I think the goal of every cross-examination is to show that, not every, but many of them, is to show that the witness is not being entirely forthright. I think the ruling of Liggett is essentially that you can't call a witness a liar. You can't ask the witness, are you lying now, or are you lying then, or is another person who disagrees with you lying in their testimony? To me, the essence of Liggett in the case of Epinato is that you can't use the word lie or something like that. But of course you can cross-examine a witness.
Absolutely.
A way to try to show their story. I mean, there'd be no point of having a trial if there wasn't a point of.
Absolutely, but you also have to take the witness on whatever answer that they give. If you were to present them with a question saying, were you telling the truth or not telling the truth at that particular time? And if they say, no, I was telling the truth, you have to take them at their word and they have to drop the subject. But in this particular case, he's trying to expand beyond that. He's trying to say, no, she's not telling the truth then, she's not telling the truth now.
My problem with the cross-examination here is that there was none. There was no cross-examination of the victim about the prior incident.
I agree.
Did you understand the judge's ruling to entirely preclude that cross-examination?
No, it didn't preclude cross-examination, not at all. I mean, as I said before, at least according to my reading of the record, there were these two particular areas that were forbidden from cross-examination. Mm-hmm. That left everything else open on the table, and the defendant just opted not to go there with this particular witness. Now, I know that in the record, at least, the defendant's made a claim, or I should say, excuse me, in the brief, the defendant has made a claim saying, well, it was never subject to direct exam by the prosecution, so we were forbidden from going there. But that's not a correct reading, at least, of the rules of cross-examination and the power and the authority of the trial court to allow cross-examination.
Or they could have called her back in their case.
Could have done that as well, absolutely. And also, I think the opinion in Merritt versus People says explicitly that it would be if the trial court went so far as to say, well, we're barring this because it was never brought up on direct, it could be potentially violating the holding of the Merritt opinion as well. So going to the final argument here, which is that even if this court were to conclude that the error in this particular issue did occur, the error itself was harmless because, in fact, the evidence of the Hines incident did get before the jury. There's no question about that. The defendant did make comments and statements, both in opening and closing, that the defendant has made allegations against boyfriends before, that her stories have changed, they fluctuated. At the very least inference, he's saying she lies. She changes her stories. Consequently, that information did get before the jury. Jurors are about to make reasonable inferences. So unless this bench has any other questions for me, we'd ask that you affirm the convictions below. Thank you very much.
Do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Bishop.
Thank you.
Counsel, you have a little over 3 minutes and 23 seconds.
Thank you. Your Honor, am I allowed to make any reference to that being a false accusation? You can ask her what happened. I won't mention that it was dismissed, obviously, the court speaking. And you may not ask her if she lied. That's essentially the same thing as saying, was that a false accusation? You can't ask a witness, are you lying? That was right before the victim testified.
But you may ask her about what happened.
The allegation occurred, not whether it was false. See, now, okay. I'm sorry if I'm not being clear, because
I don't think it's your fault. I just read the transcript.
The fact that the accusation was made makes it worse for the defendant. Evidence that the accusation was false makes it better for the defendant. We wanted to present evidence that the prior accusation was false and that this is her modus operandi.
Why does it have to be false to show that it was her modus operandi? If it was truthful, that would play to the prosecution's notion that she's a victimized person.
Right.
But if she made the accusation and her modus operandi is to make accusations of choking,
and that are false. That's the key. That's what we were preventing from doing.
What wasn't part of the problem, it seemed as though there was a line that the attorneys maybe weren't clear that the trial court was trying to draw, which was the trial court was saying, you can't specifically ask, were you lying, you can't talk about the dismissal, but the trial court did say that they could talk about what Mr. Himes said at that point in time in the past. He couldn't now go into it in retrospect and comment on what he might have said later or what he thinks about it or what he thinks about this case. But the trial court did attempt to lay some parameters, which I think perhaps it was just confusion by the attorneys as to where that line was drawn, and they didn't want to step too close to the line, so they didn't go there.
No,
that's what it seems to me when I look at this.
There was no confusion, Your Honor. Respectfully, no, there was no confusion about where the line was drawn because that the trial court repeated that multiple times, and I've cited that in my brief multiple times, and I would just ask the court to reference those citations in the record as to how clear the court's ruling was. That under no circumstances will you touch the truth or falsity of this accusation, prior accusation, through evidence or argument. And that's so not only was this evidentiary ruling a violation of or incorrect under the rules of evidence, but it was also a constitutional violation of the facts of this case. Let's be frank here. The evidence presented to the jury and that which the counsel could argue was not that compelling. However, if you put in this evidence that the prior accusation was false, now we've got something here. Why is the victim lying in this case? Well, this has happened before. This is what happens. This is how she does things. And it changes the tenor of the case completely. I see that on my timeline.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you for your arguments. The case will stand submitted, and the opinion will issue in due course.